Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to the Catch Good Health Radio Show with health educator and life coach, Erica Hurray-Butcher. We're all about health here with a life coaching twist, offering stories that will inspire and inform while laughing along the way. Thanks for joining us. Hi, everybody. This is Erica Hurray-Butcher, health educator and life coach with Catch Good Health and Catch Good Health Radio. And I'm on the air today with Karen Hammers. Hi, Karen.
Hi, Erica.
Hello. And Karen is actually a doctor. She's a psychiatrist, and she's also a life coach. And she's been on the air with me before for another show, and today I'm really excited to be talking with her about how to listen to your body to improve your health. We've both had our own health journeys, and listening to what our bodies were saying and the wisdom it held really helped us both get healthier, and it can help for you too. So we'll talk about that in just a second. I wanted to quickly share that one of the projects that I'm working on is a retreat, and Karen knows a little bit about this. It's a sisterhood retreat, and there are, there's five of us who are working on it right now. We're all coaches, and it's for women and their best friends, and we're going to be hosting it most likely in the Maryland area, this spring. So if you're listening, spring 2015, and you can go to catchgoodhealth.com for updates on that. So Karen, I'm thrilled that you're back on the air with me. And like I said, I know that we've both had our own health journeys. So my first question is, why are you passionate about helping people listen to their body to get healthier?
Well, interesting question. I think I've always been interested in the human body and health. I remember when I was a teenager reading articles in 17 magazine about diet and nutrition and exercise and coming up with my own exercise plans. And I have to say, back then I was real thin, so it wasn't, you know, that I really needed to exercise. But I was just fascinated by the human body. And I think that's part of what led me to becoming a physician in the first place, was I always wanted to know how things worked. But I really started thinking about this recently in the last few months when somebody asked me, how do you stay so thin? And I started to give my pat answer of, you know, I just watch what I eat and I exercise. And the more I thought about it, the more I realized it's really much more than that. It's that I've learned to listen to my body. And for people who think, oh, my God, doctors know everything about nutrition and how to maintain wellness, and I have to say that, unfortunately, back in the day when I was in medical school, and I'm not really so sure that things are all that much different now, there really wasn't any focus on nutrition and maintaining health. It was more about learning about disease states and diagnosing illness and treating illness. And it wasn't until I was doing my internship in internal medicine and I was taking care of patients in an intensive care unit, my senior resident handed me the medical chart and said, write the orders for this patient for their IV nutrition. And I realized I had no idea how to do it because I'd never been taught that. That kind of the process of really learning a little bit more about nutrition and the importance of it, and not only in health but in illness, because when someone is acutely ill and in an intensive care unit, their nutritional needs are much different than a healthy person. Their body actually needs more calories in order to heal. And when someone's not able to eat and the only way they can get that nutrition is via intravenous or feeding tubes, then it's really important to understand what the person needs in order to help them get back on the road to health. And, of course, the good thing is that there are dietitians in hospitals, so we ended up consulting a dietitian to make sure what we were ordering was correct. But I have to say that, you know, for people who are just sort of on the road to trying to sort all this out for themselves and learning how to listen to your body, I'd say that number one step is that you have to educate yourself about the basics. You have to understand what are the differences between proteins, fats, and carbohydrates.
Hmm.
And I think probably just because I've always been interested in health and you know, maintaining health, that I've always been drawn to reading articles about this stuff. You know, what years ago there was a lot of controversy about free radicals. Like the medical establishment didn't really believe in free radicals, which I now find so amusing that now it's pretty much accepted as common fact that produces free radicals and how important they are in illnesses and in maintaining health. But, you know, things that I've read and taught myself about since the days of medical school are information about the glycemic index and how important it is,
mm-hmm.
You know, which foods are going to raise your blood sugar, of course, which leads to what's really sort of a hot topic, I think, in medicine is about sugar and the inflammation that it causes in our bodies and how
mm-hmm.
it may lead to illnesses and aging also. So if nothing else, you know, it's important to learn about this so you can maintain a healthy appearance. So, So I think also just understanding the basics about calories. I mean, I have never counted calories, but just understanding the calorie content of foods helps me make wiser health choices. Like, for instance, there are 4 calories per gram in proteins and carbohydrates. There are 9 calories per gram in fat. So just knowing that means that you may choose to eat food that's a little bit lower in fat than other foods. And I remember back in the day when I used to love cheesecake, and I swear I could have, in the past, I could have eaten a cheesecake and never gained an ounce. But then I learned that there were like 70 to 80 grams of fat in a slice of cheesecake. I'm like, oh, my God. I think I've eaten cheesecake since then.
So, cheesecake's rough.
I mean, I still love it. And it's, and I also have to say
it's delicious.
This process
That's...
of learning about your body is not to deprive yourself of things you really love, but just to understand, you know, the basics about the foods that you eat and how it affects your body. Does that make sense to you? Is that kind of what you've done too? I know that you've master's degrees and health education. You had to learn all about this stuff.
Well, you know, ironically, like you, my master's is in community health, and I went to SUNY. It's a great university system. I'm very happy with the program that I completed. I studied the school health program and then community health and public health. And most of the people who were undergraduates or who were in the program had been undergraduate health ed majors. So they actually got more nutrition training as undergraduates, but graduate school we focused on a lot of different health topics. We talked about a lot of childhood obesity and programs to help with that, but we really didn't study nutrition there. I think most people took it before, and I had to do an extra 20 credit, no, actually an extra 35 credits of undergraduate health classes because I had a business undergrad. So before I could graduate, I had to do extra classes. But I never was able to really line up my schedule with the nutrition class. So I actually finished grad school with very, very little nutrition training. I understood how it impacted public health and how to plan programs, but I really didn't have any nutrition training. So I had, you know, through my own health crises and journey, you know, I developed autoimmune diseases. I know Karen knows this, and I mentioned this a few times on the show. And one of them was Crohn's disease. And my first gastro, just basically, I would keep asking, what food should I eat? I don't, you know. And meanwhile, I'm eating Oreo cookies at the time, you know. My diet is not good. No offense to Oreos, but they're not the healthiest things in the world to eat, particularly when you're not feeling well. So, you know, I was heavy on pastas. My family's very Italian culturally, so we ate a lot of pasta. And, you know, I like Doritos and Oreos. I might have fast food here and there. I did really like veggies, but getting into the habit of purchasing fresh vegetables and figuring out how to cook them was hard for me back then. Now it's a breeze, but back then it was like something that, I don't know, somebody else did. So my first gastroenterologist basically, I mean, I think literally he said, just don't eat things that make you sick. Which, at the time, everything really made me sick.
Right.
So I would try to figure out what made me more sick than other things, but ultimately I really needed a lot of help with my nutrition. And also just to calm down the disease. So, because even healthy things at that point were going to keep making me sick. I went to a specialist gastro, which is like a, I call him my super specialist, at a world-renowned hospital. He was more open to nutrition, but he didn't offer any wisdom. My first one would just shoot it down. This one didn't do that. But he had a dietitian who I worked with. And she basically taught me what to eat during a flare-up, which was toast, water, and tea, and like rice, I think. That's it. And then basically tried to help me eat healthier generally after that. It still didn't, I mean, I had a different doctor tell me that I had a gluten issue, but the other doctor said that that wasn't the case. So I was getting all this conflicted information. And then I wound up graduating with my master's around this time and learned about E. Cornell Certificate in Plant-Based Nutrition through the T. Colin Campbell Foundation as well. And I had bought the book, The China Study, previous to that and was fascinated with the idea of the research that was done and how animal protein, we need protein, but we don't need as high the mass quantities that Americans tend to consume. We need, we definitely need it, but we don't need it as much as we get it. And animal protein, according to some researchers, isn't really safe. Not such high levels of it, anyway. A minimal amount is fine. Maybe moderate is okay. But in that study, the higher levels of animal protein that a lot of us consume raised rates for cancer. And some of the cancers actually in the study, not all of them, but some of them actually reversed themselves in mice when they reduced the animal protein. So it was pretty fascinating. So I did, the author of the China study led the plant-based certificate in plant-based nutrition course that I took. And I learned a ton. There was so much information. It was really fast, but there was tons of information. So that really got me into real food. And I used to wonder, well, what do I buy? I don't know what to buy. And I had tried to go gluten-free while buying manufactured food, and my head was spinning. And then I went gluten-free after I was eating whole foods, like real food, and it's very easy, actually, to eat gluten-free when you actually consume real food because there's no gluten in real food. It's not until you get into the breads and the pastas and then the manufactured foods and some spices that you have to worry. So, and I found that a lot of my, like, just my digestive unrest that didn't go away after getting the Crohn's under control went away when I went off gluten for a year. So I did that on my own. I really, then I started green juicing, and I had learned about that through Chris Carr. She's a juice. I had purchased Crazy Sexy Diet, which was Chris Carr's book, and that's where I learned about it. Bought myself a Breville juicer, and I loved it. And I found that when I juiced in the morning a green juice with cucumber, kale, celery, carrot, lemon to kill the green taste because I couldn't handle it in the beginning, a little ginger, and a couple of pears, and I would use like 2 to 3 cucumbers. When I would drink that in the morning, I'd found myself craving that every morning. And at night, I found that I was not eating as much food at night, snacking. And that's when I finally put together that for myself, and this coming from the girl who's eating Doritos and Oreos shortly before that, one, my taste buds were able to change, and I could actually like stuff that I didn't like before, which is one of my biggest pet peeves when people tell me, but I don't like that, or I didn't like that 10 years ago. Well, you might now, and give it a whirl, is what I tell people. So anyway, my green juice every morning, I found that I lost like 5 pounds very quickly without trying at all. And that's when I finally put together for myself that what my body wanted was nutrients, not food. My body was not saying, and I just did a blog post about this, my body was not saying, oh, eat that burger, or oh, eat this, or oh, eat that. It was saying, oh, crap, my iron's low, eat some iron, or oh, no, you need more protein, eat more protein, or, oh, you're dehydrated, get more water in you, or get more water in you before you get dehydrated. So my body was telling me all these messages that I was not hearing. And part of why I was not hearing them, one, I was not tuned into my body, and two, I didn't understand how addictive sodium and sugar were. And then after actually the plant-based nutrition course, I was introduced to a book by Dr. Doug Lisle, L-I-S-L-E, if anyone's interested. It's called The Pleasure Trap, and it talks about the biochemistry in the brain and how it responds to sodium and sugar and throws off our natural pleasure signals with food, where it actually, we wind up going in reverse, where we're craving food that will harm us, that goes against our instincts, and we're thinking that food would help us taste terrible, which goes against our instincts. We really should be instinctually craving stuff that's going to help us live long and healthy, and we don't anymore because of all the stuff in our food. So that's my background. And then I also had to go yeast-free, which was a treat. I learned about the yeast-free diet. I had to do that for another autoimmune disease that I developed from medicine from the first one. And now I'm studying the specific carbohydrate diet because that is supposed to be an excellent diet. My doctor, my new doctor, who is very nutrition-focused, thank God, he's a functional medicine internist. He knows a lot about nutrition, so I finally feel like I'm not the smartest one in the room anymore when it comes to that. And he wants me on a specific carbohydrate diet, which is totally different. So I'm working on understanding that and getting inspired to begin that. So that's my background on nutrition.
Sort of what you're describing, how you're learning to listen to your body, sort of was my progression too. I mean, so, you know, I understood the basics and had educated myself about nutrition, diet, nutrition, and, you know, I tried to exercise on a regular basis, and I thought I was eating a pretty healthy diet, but I was having some issues with some chronic sinusitis, chronic back pain also. And I saw there was an alternative medicine group that I, when I lived in Colorado, that I went to see them to see, because I know what the traditional medical route was going to do. They were going to put me on antibiotics and give me antihistamines, and I just didn't think that that was really the way to resolve my issues. I wanted to understand why is this happening, not to make it go away. I ended up seeing was an allergist, and he did all kinds of allergy testing on me, and I found out I was allergic to a lot of foods, particularly tomatoes and wheat, and I used to love pizza. So there goes pizza out the window.
Oh, yes.
Once I had that information, and he recommended I go on an elimination diet, where basically you eliminate all the things that you're allergic to for at least months. And then you gradually add those foods back in. And it wasn't about, you know, you can never eat tomatoes again, or you can never eat cheese, or you can never eat wheat.
Right.
It was about saying that it was okay to eat those things, but in limited quantity and not every single day. So I don't eat pizza a day. I still occasionally eat pizza, but I understand what's going to happen when I do. So what was really telling for me after not eating dairy for a while, and going into a grocery store where they offer cheese tastings, you know, so I'd eat a little cube of cheese, and within 5 minutes, my nose was dripping like faucet. So it's like foods, because we can have delayed allergic reactions. Sometimes it's not so obvious. So I had a delayed reaction to dairy and tomatoes, which I wouldn't have known that about tomatoes. But now when I eat something that's tomato-based, I understand that my nose is probably going to drip for a few days in a row after that, but not immediately. So it was just about getting a little bit more information about how my body functioned and paying attention to those signals. Basically, that was the route I took with that. But also, again, educating myself a little bit more. But the other thing I think that you've sort of touched on is that when it comes to seeking health care or the opinions of physicians or other health care providers, you are the expert on your body, not them. They may know the science and have learned a few things, but they don't know what it feels like to live inside your body. And sometimes physicians may recommend things or suggest things, and it may not agree with you, and you have to be willing to speak up. Or if you feel like your doctor's not listening, then find someone who will listen to you. Find someone who is willing to hear the feedback that you give when they prescribe a particular medication and it doesn't agree with you. to go back and say, this doesn't agree with me and this is why, and is there something else we can try? But I'm always big on understand what is the root cause of a problem rather than let's treat the symptoms. And it was interesting because I heard Abigail Stidley did a call yesterday, and she was talking about pain. Like whenever we experience pain in our body, our initial reaction is to run and go get something to make the pain go away. And she said, imagine it's like pain in your body is like the fire alarm that goes off in a building. When the firemen show up, they don't go douse the fire alarm with water. They go seeking out the source of the fire. And it's sort of the same thing when you're dealing with in your body. You can't just make the pain go away. You have to understand what's going on and what's causing the pain, because what's causing the pain may not have anything to do with what you originally think is going on in your body. So,
right.
That makes sense.
And not what the initial doctors might think either. They might have one opinion of what's going on, and then over time, like me, you figure out, wow, it had nothing to do with what I was told initially, and it has everything to do with all these other things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's amazing. I just pulled up, I don't know if you're familiar with this group. It's the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, and basically they promote a vegan. Well, they promote a vegan, and I think the new term is whole foods, plant-based. And the difference only being with vegan, it means no animal protein, but it doesn't necessarily mean that people are eating healthy. They could still eat junk food and all that stuff, whereas whole foods plant-based is no animal protein and only whole foods. So that's the difference. If people are listening and confused by that, that's what the difference is. So anyway, they promote a whole foods plant-based diet for health and also limiting animal testing and other ethics that are involved in medicine that they're passionate about. And I found them a while ago because they offer free training for community health programs and very discounted. I think I paid $6 for the CD, and it's an entire curriculum for a whole foods plant-based diet for people who aren't eating that healthy or not, at least not vegan. And it's a great curriculum. I'm not saying everyone should not eat anything with animal protein. I still eat some. But it's a great program to get people started on healthy food, and it's cheap.
Yeah,
$6.
One thing I've realized by watching all the fad diets come and go is that, I think to keep in mind, is that we are all genetically different. Whereas one person's genetic makeup may serve them well if they eat a primarily carbohydrate-based diet, another person's doesn't. And remember when there was the fad about eating the really high diets, some people lost a lot of weight.
Yeah.
Other people just gained weight or weren't able to lose an ounce. So it's really also about how does your body respond to the foods that you're eating. And just because somebody's promoting something doesn't mean that's the bandwagon you should jump on. You really have to figure out, is this going to work for me, or is this right? Some people do really well, you know, if they limit the fats and eat a lot of carbohydrates, and other people don't. And I know a lot of unhealthy vegetarians because a lot of vegetarians think that they can just eat a lot of pasta, which is really, you know, a lot of wheat, a lot of carbohydrates, depending on what you're putting
on
the pasta.
Not a good idea.
Or the people
not
who
particularly
go to the
healthy. Yeah.
Yeah. People say, "Oh, I eat salad every day." Well, they put 1,000 calories worth of dressing on top of that salad.
Yeah, and it depends on what lettuce. Helps. Some have very, very little nutrition, and other, like romaine lettuce, has more nutrition. So it even depends on the lettuce.
Yeah. Exactly. But I really think it's interesting just to go down to in the bookstores and see what are the latest hot topics. And now, you know, I see the books on wheat belly and the books on, you know, why eating wheat isn't all that great for us. What's the one? Grain brain, I think, is what another physician has written about that. I mean, I think we also need to keep in mind that the foods we're eating today are much different than the foods that our parents' generation ate because of the genetically modified crops that are being grown. And I think the idea about in wheat belly, at least, is that the proteins in wheat that we're eating now is much different than the proteins in wheat when we were a kid. And his theory is that's why people are gaining weight. Again, I don't recommend people jump on the bandwagon, you know, that believe everything that they read, but figure out what works for your body and what doesn't work for your body. I mean, I have limited my wheat intake since learning that it's one of the things I'm allergic to, but it's not really a gluten sensitivity issue for me, so it doesn't, you know, do other things to my body. But it's just, I also realize that when I haven't had any bread or pasta for a few days, that when I do eat it, how bloated and terrible I feel, like weighted down.
Yeah.
So I really limit those foods. Make me feel lousy. Like, why would I want to, why would I want to eat something that's going to make me feel lousy, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's because you're able to hear your body now. Well, this
I just found stats
about
it. Does take,
you
know, a willingness to listen and experiment and just figure out what's going to work for you. I know a lot of people are into the green smoothie thing, but one of the things I learned when I was learning about the glycemic index is that there are some foods, I mean, even vegetables that have higher sugar content than others. Like, you know, when a diabetic blood sugar drops really low, the first thing you give them is orange juice. Why? Because it's going to raise their blood sugar immediately. So you think of that. So orange juice is really at the top of the glycemic index. It means that the sugars in the orange juice is going to get to your blood system pretty quickly. There are other foods on the glycemic index that have natural sugars in them, but it's not going to get into your system as quickly. Like things like apples are lower on the glycemic index. So it's just, you know, people who are doing smoothies just need to be aware of what is the glycemic index content of the foods that they're putting in their blender or their juicer, and just making sure that they're not just dousing themselves with a lot of natural sugars, which, you know, again, with the idea about inflammation in our bodies, it doesn't matter what form that sugar is coming from. It's sugar.
It's inflammatory. Very.
Yes.
You know, when
yeah.
I was in high school, you're going to crack up with this one. I was diagnosed as hypoglycemic, which meant low blood sugar, because I'd go through these periods where I'd get really shaky and moody, and I was really shaky, and I could feel my heart sort of beating faster, and it didn't feel well, and then I'd go for orange juice or even a packet of sugar, which was so gross, I can't believe I did that, and my sugar would bounce back up, and I'd feel fine. And so I went to the doctor, and he diagnosed me as hypoglycemic and wanted me to eat small, frequent meals throughout the day. But he never said anything about the fact that I was eating bags of Skittles throughout the school day. So I was, Skittles. So I was an athlete in high school. I did three sports, and I lived far away from the school. So I didn't always go home after school. I'd go to a friend's house, and then I'd go to you know, practice or a game or whatever we were doing. And I would I'd buy Skittles from whoever was selling them in the school. People were always selling candy. And no one ever said, hey, are you eating high amounts of sugar? What kind of foods do you eat? No one ever asked me that. They just said, oh, you're hypoglycemic. You know, you have to eat small, frequent meals, which is helpful. But it wasn't until I finally got rid of all that kind of candy and the massive shots of sugar at once that I realized I'm not hypoglycemic. I just had way too much sugar. And then I crashed after I went through that. It wasn't anything that needed to be diagnosed. I just needed to eat better. So, you know, I don't have that problem anymore unless it happens. I'm sorry?
It's basically what you're describing is the insulin crash. And it's our body's natural reaction when we ingest a large amount of sugar for our pancreas to pump out insulin to lower our blood sugar, which is why people get the sleepies like an hour or two after they've had a lot of sweets or a big meal.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But I was diagnosed with an illness. So years later, I was like, wait a second. That's kind of ridiculous.
Eating habits. That's what the diagnosis should have been,
it was
right?
Terrible. And we were all eating bad foods. So I'm looking at this Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. So here are the stats that I just saw. And not beating up the medical schools or doctors, but this is how they're being trained. More than three-quarters of medical school instructors admit that students need more nutrition education, and more than half of graduating medical students rate their nutrition knowledge as inadequate. Doctors also recognize the disconnect. 9 out of 10 believe that more nutrition counseling is needed in primary care, but only 14% feel qualified to offer it. There was a stat in here about the percentage of medical schools that even offer a class, let alone a course. Unfortunately, I'm not finding it, but it was very low. It was like 10%, I think, offer an actual class or a course in it, and and maybe 20% or so offer one class.
Mm-hmm.
So we can't, you know, I'm personally frustrated with some of the doctors that I went to that were not tuned into that, but at the same time, they weren't trained. However, being said, you and I weren't trained either in our professions, you as a doctor and me as a health educator, and we went out and learned about it ourselves. So maybe more doctors will choose to do that soon. Hopefully they will, because I think that'll help us. So go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I think the impetus is going to have to come from above because, you know, there's whole committees that decide what medical students should learn during medical school and during training. So I think society needs to put more of an emphasis on maintaining health. How do we maintain health rather than treating illness?
Yes.
So anyway, I don't want to jump on that bad and go off on tangents.
I know.
The
way we treat acute illness seems to be the same way we treat long-term illness, which is not good, at least not for
mm-hmm.
not in my experience.
Mm-hmm.
And particularly with autoimmune disease, the new doctors that I'm working with keep telling me that the way we currently treat autoimmune disease is going to dramatically change, that this is sort of suppressing the immune system is an old-school method, and over time, more and more patients will require their doctors to figure out the cause, which will lead them to figuring out what's triggering the immune system when possible, which a lot of times I've discovered it is possible to figure out. Not all the time.
Uh-huh.
There are always mysteries
uh-huh.
and they can't figure it out, but over, you know, there are some that can. So we're telling people to listen to their bodies to improve their health. Karen and I both, we didn't mention this yet, but Karen and I both went to, completed Martha Beck's life coach training program, and we learned a lot of ways to do this. One of the ways that I was going to share with people that's really easy is the right hand, left hand exercise. So you take your dominant hand, for me it'd be my right hand, and you'd ask yourself a question by writing it out. So, I don't know, probably a year ago, I wrote and said, Crohn's disease, why are you here? Which sounds really weird, but I wrote it. And then you switch hands with the pen, and you let your non-dominant hand answer. And the idea is you're accessing the other part of your brain or accessing wisdom that you wouldn't normally access. Sounds like a weird exercise, but I had profound information from it. I couldn't read what I wrote with my left hand. I had to remember what I wrote because apparently my handwriting with my left hand is horrible, but I found great information from that. And then I went through any ailment that I had or, you know, intestines, how can I help you feel better? And then I let my other hand write and share how I could. And that really helped me tune into what my body needed. We also learned something called the body compass, where we do a scan of our body from head to toe and see how it feels. Really feel what each body part is feeling as you do your scan. And that's another way. And there are guided visualizations that you can look up on YouTube. Actually, I'll find one. I have a Catch Good Health YouTube channel. I'll post something on there on a playlist. I have a My Fave Health video playlist, and I'll post something on there to help with checking in with your body.
Mm-hmm.
But Karen, what exercises, what do you recommend to people who maybe aren't so tuned in, which is really easy with our lifestyle? We're on digital devices, we're busy, people are caring for their families, their kids, rushing around, getting kids to soccer games, going to work. So it's no shock that people have sort of checked out.
Exactly.
Do you tell people that you work with? Yeah. What do you tell people that you work with? Like, what are tips to get back in touch with your body?
I think the first step is just to make conscious choices, conscious food choices, It's just be aware. And one of the things I realized, again, when somebody asked me this question, like, how do you stay so thin? I realized it's like I make those conscious choices every day, every time I eat something. And that doesn't mean that I'm always eating 100% healthy food. You know, if I had Oreos in my kitchen cabinet, I'd be to eat Oreos and a
right.
one or two. But it's just I've learned to ask myself the questions too, like, when I wake up in the morning, how hungry am I? Like, what does my body want? Not what does my head want? Because my head, you know, would want a sticky bun and a cup of coffee with, you know, lots of cream. But what my body wants is something healthy. Maybe a bowl of oatmeal with, you know, a chopped up apple in it. Like, maybe that's all my body is really hungry for that day. So it's really sort of paying attention to head versus body. Well, like, what feels, when you think about what you want to eat, does it fit in your body to imagine having eaten that? I mean, I can't imagine. I'll admit I'm occasionally prone to stopping at a fast food restaurant for a quick meal when I don't really have any other options. But I know how my body feels after that. So, I mean, for most of us, we know how our body feels after we eat a bagel and cream cheese. We know how our body feels after we eat, you know, a bowl of oatmeal without any added sugar in it. So just being aware and paying attention to how does my body feel after I've eaten X, Y, and Z so that in the future you can make those choices. Or when we've all moaned on the sofa after a huge Thanksgiving dinner, so we know how
right.
You can make a conscious choice about do I want to eat that much or, you know, when do I need to stop? That's the other thing. Like, when you're in the midst of eating, you can ask yourself with every bite, am I still really hungry? Do I really need to clean my plate? You know, I know that was drilled into our heads when we were kids, we had to clean our plate. But now that we're adults, we don't really have to. If you're not hungry enough to, hang on your plate and stop eating. The other thing I've noticed attention to is emotional eating. And I didn't really recognize that I was prone to that until one day something happened and I don't remember what it was. I just remember I was ticked off about something. I thought, oh, I'm just going to go with my favorite bakery and get a cup of tea and one of their delicious muffins. And then I stopped myself and I realized, number one, I was not hungry at all. Number two, if I was hungry, that's probably not what I would have chosen to eat. And number three, I was making that choice because, you know, eating sweet things sort of satisfies an emotional need for me. I mean, we all know what our comfort foods are. You know, we go, you know, when we want to comfort ourselves with food, what are those food choices we make at those times? So just being able to differentiate then. I don't think I've been to that bakery since that day. But so just recognizing it, and again, not that every time you have to say no, I don't want to do that. You know, sometimes maybe you do want to give in to that emotional need. And I also notice, you know, that we both live in the Northeast where it's been really cold this winter, bitterly cold, that seasonal changes in our appetite, too, are okay. During the winter, we crave comfort food. And I think it's because our body, there's a biologic need for our bodies to put on fat in the wintertime as the temperatures drop and the days shorten. You know, it's just learning to pay attention to all those external cues, but also just learning to listen to your body and asking your body, checking in with your body occasionally, saying, well, body, what do you want to eat today?
Yes, and listening.
What do you do when it comes
listening
time
for an
to
answer.
Make, how do you do it?
Oh, what do I do?
Yeah.
Well, I was actually, one of the things I thought of while you were talking is a cookbook that I have called Clean Food by Terry Walters. And it's actually broken down into season. So it's only seasonal vegetables, which the idea is if you eat what's seasonal near you, it provides your body with the nutrition, more of the nutrition it needs during that season. Now, I don't know if that means all the vegetables that grow by you are native to your region or not, but that's sort of the idea behind it. But wait, what was your question? You asked me a question. I'm sorry. I'm not remembering it now.
No, I was wondering what guides you when it comes time to make daily food choices.
The more healthy that I eat, the more healthy food I crave. And my thing is sugar. Sugar is a big problem for me, partly because of a fungal infection. And fungus, I have learned, feeds off of sugar. Yeasted fungus feeds off of that. And I'm prone to them, unfortunately, because of a biological medicine I've been on for a long time. So it makes me susceptible to these infections, and so I have to be really careful about the sugar. I'm eating more than I should be or that I prefer to. I'm still not eating mass quantities like I did back in the day. But it's still not where I really, you know, I kind of fluctuate. Sometimes I do it really, really well, and other times I don't do it as well. but I've learned not to beat myself up over it because that gets me nowhere. So instead I just,
yeah, we can
okay,
also train
all
our
right.
taste buds. I mean, I know in the past there was
yeah.
a time when I eliminated sugar from my diet completely for a while, and then when I started eating sweets again, they tasted
yeah.
weird and strange.
Yeah.
So, unfortunately,
that's the
I've
thing.
Let it in, but I really limit how much sugar that I have on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah.
But I think
I use, if I'm, well, if
but,
I try to sweeten something, I now use stevia. I don't use sugar anymore. So if I have to add something to a recipe or I'm making hot chocolate because it's so cold out or I'm having coffee or tea or something, I either use stevia. Tea, I use honey, a little bit of honey, but I don't actually put sugar in anything anymore, which has
mm-hmm.
helped. I also don't drink any high-sugar drinks. So I used to drink this
mm-hmm.
Italian soda and then feel horrible afterwards and have flare-ups because of all the sugar, the inflammation from the sugar. I don't do any of that anymore. So that's all gone. But I, you know, I, if I start craving things that aren't healthy, then the alarm bells go off.
mm-hmm.
I don't mind if I'm craving healthy things. If I'm feeling like I want to have an avocado on a rice cracker or something or rice cake, then I have an avocado. I think what I found is the more I eat healthy, the more I can hear my body direct me to what food I want. What nutrients I want for the in the, you know, whatever food it is.
Yeah,
somebody just taught me recently. Oh, go ahead.
I think it's really important to pay attention to what our body's craving. And again, what our body's craving, not our head's craving. There's a medical condition called PICA, P-I-C-A,
right.
where people eat weird
oh.
things. And it was amazing when I learned about this medical what they found out was really sort of fueling these weird food cravings, like eating dirt, like, you know, babies eating dirt, young kids eating dirt, was because that there might have been a mineral deficiency in the patient who was eating the weird thing. So, you know, if your body's craving nutritious, then maybe there's something in that food that your body really needs. So pay attention to those cravings.
Right.
Again, if it's a something sweet and over the top, then that's your head telling you to eat that, not your body.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
But I think the other thing, Rick, to eating healthy is when I'm in the grocery store, I read labels for prepared foods, and if it's got weird
mm-hmm.
stuff in it that I can't, if that's not an ingredient that I can buy myself and add to food, then I don't, my feeling
yeah.
is it doesn't belong in the food, and I'm not going to buy that packaged ingredient. I mean, there aren't many packaged
yeah.
things that I buy. I mean, but, you know, I don't want to make crackers at home. So there are things like that
mm.
that I do buy. But I also,
mm-hmm.
I don't buy junk food. I don't keep junk food at home. My body doesn't really crave junk food. But so if you fill your
mm.
cupboards with healthy things to eat, healthy alternatives, then you're more
definitely.
Likely to sort of
yeah.
say, you know, I have, it's been years since I bought Oreo cookies. Not that I'd turn one down if someone offered me one, perhaps.
Me as well.
But,
yeah. Yes. I learned I can't bring food at home because I'll eat it. But I am very disciplined when I shop, as long as I don't shop very hungry. So when
yeah,
I shop,
shop,
I have
sure
no problem.
I'm sure you do shop the outside portions of the store
yes.
where the whole,
yes.
you know, the healthy
yep.
things are.
Yeah, the real food.
The real food, right.
Yeah, that's
the
exactly
more real food
it. Yeah.
you eat, the better you're going to be. I mean, one thing that drives me crazy is people who are so afraid to eat fat, but they cook with margarine and all this other fake stuff. It's like, for God's sake, just eat some real fat. Olive oil, butter, occasionally eat some butter.
Yeah.
It's not going to... but fat
yeah.
is just as an important component in our diet as proteins and carbohydrates. Our bodies have to have fat
yeah.
in order to function.
There's a... this is so funny. I keep bringing up books and stuff, but my doctor wrote a book called The Fat Resistance Diet.
Mm-hmm.
And he shares, if people have plateaued with their weight loss and they keep trying everything they can and it's not working, like genuinely
mm-hmm.
trying everything they can, he talks about the types of fats and the percentages of those fats that we need in our diet and how a lot of
mm-hmm.
times it's because we cut out too much fat that we think all fat's bad, and that's not the case. So if somebody's
mm-hmm.
plateauing with their weight loss, the Fat Resistance Diet has recipes too. It's a good book to read. So, Karen,
yeah.
we have about 30 seconds left. I don't want to, like, quickly wind down and abruptly end. So I'm going to say, let's say bye to the live listeners, and it'll be
okay.
the end of this. another couple of minutes will be on the archive. So if you are getting cut off in 20 seconds, you can listen to the end on the archive as soon as we hang up. It'll be available. So thank you. KarenHammers.com for more information about Karen and CatchGoodHealth.com for me. Okay. Yes, there's a lot of misinformation out there about nutrition. And I tell people, unless you have a medical condition where you've been told by somebody very experienced with nutrition to follow a certain diet, what you should be doing is eating whole foods, real foods, as much of them as possible.
Yeah. Who are vegetarians and don't want to eat meat proteins. I mean, educate yourself about how to combine vegetable sources to get the same amino acid content and protein in your diet.
Mm. Yes, absolutely. And vitamin B is sometimes hard when you're not eating animal protein. It's available, but sometimes that's the one nutrient that you most have to worry about.
I can think of one medical condition. If somebody has renal disease, then eating a high-protein diet is not good for them because your kidneys are necessary to eliminate the waste products from eating protein. So
yes, yeah.
There might be other medical conditions like that where your doctor gives you very good advice that you should listen to about what
you should
not be eating. But again, I think you have to pay attention to your too. But I think the one thing that we haven't touched that I think is just as important, listening to your body, is moving your body. It's not just about what you're putting into it, but moving it.
What you're doing with it, I know
for myself that I've had issues with chronic back pain in the past. And not that, it still doesn't bother me from time to time, but I remember one particular bad bout. I was really beside myself and trying to just make the pain go away. And I went to an anesthesiologist who was I was going to get steroid injection in my back, and while he was doing the evaluation and we were talking, he shared with me that a fellow anesthesiologist had back issues too, and how he swore by physical therapy and how he had to do his physical therapy exercises every day, otherwise he couldn't stand tolerate being on his feet for long hours in the operating room. And as soon as he said that to me, I thought, oh, my God, this is something I haven't really considered. I mean, I have always been fairly, physically active and thought that I didn't really need physical therapy because I knew how to exercise. But when he said that to me, I told him that I decided I didn't want the steroid injection and that I was going to try physical therapy first instead to see if I couldn't get some benefit from that. And I did. And it's like, oh, my God, I can't believe that no doctor had ever suggested that maybe.
Yeah, mentioned physical therapy.
So it was at that point that I really learned the importance of moving my body. Because I think when we're in pain, we tend to not want to move. We want to.
Absolutely. It's counterintuitive.
Yeah. We want to curl up in a ball until the pain goes away. But sometimes, especially as we get older, when things, start to ache and creak, that it's really important. It's like exercise is the lubricant that our joints need. And, especially, again, as we age, it's weight-bearing exercises that helps keep our bones strong and helps us to avoid osteoporosis. So it's even more important as we get older. So that was really eye-opening for me. And I've also explored alternative medicine, or some people call it complementary medicine these days, because I know that the traditional route for dealing with chronic back issues in medicine, the only thing most doctors are going to offer you is either pain meds or surgery, and I really wasn't interested in either one of those. I really wanted to, again, sort of what's causing this, what can I do to prevent it, how can I help keep myself healthy. So I took the exercises I learned from physical therapy. I sort of modified, what I was doing in the gym when I showed up. And I just, there are days that go by. If I don't get to the gym, I realize I'm starting to get achy. And now I know I just need to move my body on a regular basis. And, for people who don't like gyms, there are other ways you can move your body. Go out for a walk, play tennis, golf, whatever it is that you enjoy doing is important. How about for you?
Yeah.
I know you've had some issues with
exercise. Yeah, absolutely. After the Crohn's, I wound up developing leukocytoclastic vasculitis, which causes inflammation in your skin, where this is gross. The blood leaks out of your blood vessels and up through your skin. You don't have blood all over you or anything like that, but it's within the tissue. Excruciatingly painful. And for anybody with autoimmune disease, one of the things that you also oftentimes get are either Charlie horses or joint pain. And I had some joint pain with Crohn's, but the vasculitis, I was in really, in addition to the flare-ups, my hip, my right hip was hurting all the time. My knees hurt. And I think my elbows hurt too. I really had high levels of inflammation throughout my entire body because of all of it, but my joints hurt. And I always heard about people, you know, I had been trained with people with arthritis that they really need exercise if they're able to, if their doctor okays them for it. But, and it's so counterintuitive because it hurts. And it does hurt in the beginning too. But you use that joint and it starts to get more, less fluid in it, and it starts working better again. And it helps reduce the inflammation in the joint. And the thing that motivated me to work out when I still wasn't 100%, I might have been at like maybe 50%. One medicine started to work at least a little bit where I can sneak workouts in between flare-ups. But what I found that motivated me is I remember laying in bed feeling really, really upset that I felt like I was living on the sidelines of my life. I couldn't walk without pain. Many times it was severe, really horrible pain, and I'm not a big painkiller person, so I only took Tylenol at the most. I didn't want to go down the road of pain meds. And they kept offering them to me, and I'm like, no. And so I stuck with Tylenol and just sort of wung it, and I managed through it. But there was one time I was laying in bed just frustrated that I had to leave an event with my husband early because I was having a flare-up and my legs were swelling, and upset that I couldn't do the things that I wanted to do. Also upset with myself because I was very active as a kid. In high school, I played college tennis. And then I got really lazy and sedentary through my 20s. And I was frustrated because I had taken for granted lots of things, one, being able to be active, and also being able to walk and being able to walk without pain. And I remember laying there saying, you know what? The first moment that I can actually start exercising again, I'm going to do it. I don't care how minimal it is. I am really out of shape at this point. My body's been beat up from this stuff. But I'm going to hire a trainer, and I'm going to do it. And then one of the medicines helped a little, and I was able to do that in between flare-ups. That joint pain dropped significantly, pretty quickly. And also what I had developed was restless leg syndrome. I never bothered telling my doctor about it because one more diagnosis wasn't really interesting to me. I was like, whatever, I'm not even bringing this up, but my legs would get unbelievably restless. That went away also. But I found that if I stretched out my workouts too much, like one, I eventually got even healthier, or my legs got even healthier, so I was able to work out more often and more regularly. If I missed a couple of workouts, my legs were so restless at night. And I realized that's my body's cue to me. This is how I interpret it. That's my body's cue to me that I need to move my body. I've now learned that I don't have a syndrome. It's my body saying, get off your butt and go do something. I need exercise. Truly, that's what my restless leg syndrome was telling me. I know it might very well be different for other people, but that's what I learned, that my body was saying, get up. I'm restless. I need to move. And my body felt tons better. I mean, I have no joint pain. I think most of that was exercise, but I am on other meds that are now actually taking care of the problem. But I haven't had joint pain in a long time. My joints feel really good. I was on lots of rounds of steroids, and I have osteoporosis in my family. Thankfully, I have a bigger frame, which is good, which helps me. But the exercise, weight-bearing exercise, is also helping. And, I mean, I've taken a few falls on ice and just bounced up without, back up without a problem, thank God. So exercise absolutely is a great way to get back in touch with your body. And once you get over the hang-ups, if you have any of going to a gym or exercising or just getting it into your routine, that's the hardest part. It's not hard after you do that. I mean, you have to just schedule it in and find ways to do it. But once you get over that initial hump of getting active, your body, I find it, my body craves it. I don't like not doing it.
Yeah, I think it's awesome for people who haven't been physically active that when they first start out that they ease into it. Because I know for me, if I haven't been to the doctor for a while for whatever reason, I don't go in and, you know, go crazy with my workout. I go in and I treat my muscles, you know, nicely by not overwhelming them. So because, you know, if you go to the doctor, haven't been in 6 months, and you do a workout where you're so sore you can barely move for a week, that's not really good incentive back in the gym.
No. No.
So again, it's listening to your body and not overdoing it. And if you're clueless about exercise or working out at a gym, hire a personal trainer to sort of show you the ropes. But again, if gyms aren't your thing, there are other things you can do. You can buy a yoga video or go to a yoga class.
Yeah.
You can turn the radio and dance in the kitchen while you're making dinner. I mean,
Exactly. It just
your body.
Start small. Yep.
Yeah,
if you like
dancing,
crank the music up and dance around your house. Grab your husband if he likes to dance, or your kids or your friends. My personal trainer, who unfortunately we both moved, so we're not working out together anymore, but she would say to people, just get canned goods. If you buy canned goods, just use those. Walk around your house or your apartment complex or wherever you are, somewhere safe, a park, and just move your arms with hold a can of peas or something. And just use those as light weights. Just moving your body, or even stretching. If you want to start with stretching, get on the floor on your carpeting and just put your arms over your head and stretch your body. There's lots of ways that you can work out without spending any money. And if you can hire a trainer, I think that's fantastic. I was able to because they were quite affordable at a military base. I was able to get one on a military base. So I lucked out. But a lot of gyms are now offering not only personal training, but group personal training. It's like a group personal training thing where they'll get like five people in a group and work out with the trainer, so it's a lot cheaper. You're with other people, but I don't think there's going to be much of a difference. I mean, yes, one-on-one attention is great, but the five of you guys, there's a lot of downtime after your trainer tells you how to do something. So if you could do a group training, that's great. There's lots of classes. Like we said, dance, you could do Zumba. I absolutely love spin, and I absolutely love TRX and also kettlebells. Those are the three things that I just discovered I love. Every time I get on a spin bike, no matter how long it's been or how hard I plan to work, I'm excited because I can do it.
Mm-hmm.
So I just feel grateful and gratitude.
With working with a personal trainer is find somebody you feel really listens to you, too, because it's just like going to a doctor who doesn't listen to you. If your personal trainer is telling you to do things that are making your body hurt and they're not listening to your feedback, then find somebody else.
Right.
Again, you're the expert of your body, not anybody else. So
exactly. And it doesn't have to be like Biggest Loser. I would walk right out that door if I was a contestant on that show. I'm not a fan of yelling at people. I had coaches who yelled at me in high school. I'm not a fan. If somebody yelled at me, I'll...
instructor would just scream at you. I don't know somebody at me first thing in the morning.
No, that's crazy. I know there's a spin instructor that I knew of that would throw a water bottle at a soldier if they weren't doing it well. She'd actually taught soldiers spin. Yeah. And I was told that she... is much nicer to, non-soldiers. And I'm like, I'm not comfortable with that. I don't care how nice she is to non-soldiers. I'm not comfortable with the fact that she actually threw a water bottle at somebody in a spin class. That's not cool to me. So, I found a trainer who was awesome. And she definitely pushed, but it was never rude. She was never rude. She was kind and compassionate. She had family members with autoimmune disease, so she knew what I was going through. She understood it. We did the best we could when we could. When I needed rest, I got rest. And like you said, I go a few days and I don't go work out as often, or I haven't been as much the last couple of months because I moved and I've been working on a house. I don't beat myself up when I get to the gym. I try to get a good workout in, and I know I'll build it back up again. You know, but it has to be part of your lifestyle.
Exercise day.
Okay.
I count snow shoveling as an exercise day now.
Absolutely. It's a workout.
At least, depending on how much snow there is. So.
Oh, my God, I'm sweating under my coat shoveling. You know, you start out cold, and then 10 minutes later, you're sweating. Yeah, the one thing also for listeners that I tell anybody who will listen to this is pay attention to your food because you're getting, you want to be healthier, you want to treat yourself well. Exercise because you want to treat yourself well. Don't do it to lose weight specifically. Do it because you want to take care of yourself. The weight loss comes from taking care of yourself and being compassionate. So if you're focused on fitting into a swimsuit, that's really not what we're talking about. We're talking about just really getting healthy. And as my trainer says, fitting into that swimsuit is a happy side effect of taking good care of yourself.
Exactly. It's like I wrote a blog post on this topic about, you know, how do I stay so thin? And I realized it's for me, it's, I don't really care. Number one, I don't think I'm thin. If people knew how much I weigh, they'd be shocked. But it's just because I'm tall and I can carry more weight on my frame. But for me, it's really not about being thin or how I look in the mirror. It's really all about how does my body feel? Do I feel good? And, you know, a psychiatrist and a physician, just recognizing that what's going on below our neck affects how we're feeling above our neck. So how we're feeling physically affects our mental state, our emotional state, too. I mean, how many people are really happy when they had the flu? No one I know. So there is a connection there. If you take care of your physical health, you're just going to feel so much better mentally, too.
It's all interconnected. You take care of you work on your emotional health, your body is going to feel better. You work on your physical health, your emotional and mental health will be better. It's all interconnected and entwined. That's why you're frustrated with medicine now, because it's so specialized. And I mean, I think I counted 16 doctors in a year period. I got bounced, and I also moved during that period, but I got bounced from one doctor to the next doctor to the next doctor to the next doctor to the next. Some were scared to treat me, like a couple of local internists in the new town didn't want to really treat me. One actually said, where do you plan to get good health care while you're here? And I was like, well, I thought with you. I mean, why?
Oh my God.
I'm at a doctor's office. I kind of figured it would be with you, but I guess not. But I sort of understood what she was talking about. I had told her the hospitals that I had gone to, and they were kind of big hospitals, so I got it. But I, you know, I was hoping for a good doctor down there too. But it's so specialized that I found that people are not looking at the whole system. And now, if I need a joint replacement, I want a guy who does knees, if it's my knee, or a guy who does elbows. So that, I totally get the specialization. And I get the theory behind specialized care, because general doctors, internists, well, general practitioners, you know, they can't be an expert in every single thing. That's impossible. So you have experts on each system or whatever it is, or each joint. But when I would go to all of them, they were not looking at the big picture. They weren't putting the whole picture together. They weren't, you know, I was being treated for one thing and it caused all these other problems with other systems. But that didn't matter to the first doctor because their goal was just to get rid of that one problem. And then I had to go to another doctor to take care of those problems. And then I take care of those, and then I have to go to a different one to take care of the problems that that one created because of the treatment of that thing. So it's sort of like, yes, you want to take good care of yourself. You want to go to the good doctors that you could find. But my suggestion to people also is to find either internists who truly are a little bit more on the holistic side and look at the whole body. Or I also recommend to people who are frustrated and aren't getting better with whatever's going on to look for people who identify as either integrative or functional medicine doctors. They're usually internists, but they look at the whole body system, and the functional piece is that they really look for the root cause. I do have an internist who basically does all those things, who refuses to call herself that, though, because she says that she's what an internist used to be and that she doesn't want to use a label like functional medicine because basically she wants to take her internal medicine back from not looking for the cause and just writing prescriptions all the time to treat stuff without helping people with behavior change, lifestyle changes. But anyway, so that's just on a side note. Well, we've been on the air for a little over an hour now, Karen.
I know. You and I get jamming on topics that we're passionate about. We could go on, but...
Oh, my God. We could have a 2-3 hour... I know. We've talked for a long time on the phone at different occasions. There's so much to share about it, and we want to get the word out there and help people get healthier. So we should wind down finally.
Tell us to listen to our body. I think that's where you need to.
Yeah, listen to your body. And like Karen said, become more conscious of your food choices. Pay attention to how they make you feel. Exercise and see how that impacts your body and how your body and how much more in touch you are with your body when you start doing that, when you start using your body. And then I had shared the right hand, left hand exercise. Ask yourself a question with your dominant hand regarding your health and let the other hand answer it. And your body compass, which is it's a nice exercise, but the quick version is scanning your body and seeing how it literally feels, each part of your body, and just being more in tune to that. And then you could do that every day, just so that you start checking more in with your body. All right, Karen. So look, if people are interested in learning more about Karen, your website's KarenHammers.com, right? Still KarenHammers.com?
Mm-hmm.
And I know you've got a newsletter, so if people want to sign up for it, they can sign up for it there. And for me, go to catchgoodhealth.com. And I'm also on Facebook. I'm a little media whore. I'm on Facebook, Twitter. I'm trying to figure out Pinterest. That thing boggles my mind. I'm about to give up. I'm using Pinterest more for personal reasons at this point. But anyway, Twitter, Facebook, Pinterest, and, of course, Catch Good Health Radio. Anyway, Karen, thank you so much for doing another show with me. I love it. I love doing shows with you. You're great.
Well, thank you, Erica, for inviting me. It's really great to talk with you about all these topics that we're so passionate about.
Yes, I know. This is why we do what we do, because we enjoy it and
exactly.
We want to get the word out. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, guys, thanks so much for listening. Whether you were live or in the archive, we appreciate it. And 2 weeks, I'll be back on the air. 2 weeks, Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern time. It's biweekly, so that's when I'm back on the air. And until then, I'll see you guys later. Thank you, Karen, so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Erica.
Take care. Bye-bye. Bye, guys.
Bye-bye.
Thanks so much for listening. For more information about Erica, her health education and life coaching services, or Catch Good Health, please visit catchgoodhealth.com. And don't forget, good health is contagious and you can pass it on.